First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the people that have contributed to this work and the funding. So why do we need deformable modeling? Mike showed this head and neck response. This is a 4D CT scan or a time-sorted scan of a lung patient. And you can see that the lung is moving and deforming. And then you've seen this scan where you have rectal filling and bladder filling. So all of these things drive our need for deformable registration. And why do we need soft tissue for the deformable registration? I just threw this slide in after all the talk about prostate. So these are a repeat MR scans that have been, the prostate's been contoured and turned into finite element model meshes and registered using the seeds to do a rigid registration of translation and then a translation and rotation. And we looked at the deformation between the two after the seed alignment. And so you can see that you have over a centimeter of deformation that occurs of the prostate surface between the two instances of this patient after you've done a seed registration. So this shows that seeds are just a surrogate, and what we really want to look at is the soft tissue. And this is just a sagittal view of the prostate showing that deformation. So the rectum would be here. So you can see what that rectum motion tends to do to your prostate. So depending on which of these scans you planned on, you would either be missing a region of the prostate when you treated on this day, or if this was your planning CT, you'd be radiating a lot of the rectum on the subsequent day. So this is another view of how our simulation and treatment planning process is in the radiotherapy environment. The patient comes in and has some disease and some normal tissue, and we have some models for how those normal tissues respond, and the physicians have some understanding of how much dose they need to give to the tumor. So they undergo multimodality imaging depending on the site. It can be a CT scan, a 4D CT scan that describes the breathing motion, CT PET, which is shown here, MR scans, which can be cine loops or anatomical, and then these feed into a patient-specific model that the patient, that the physician then defines a dose that they need, and then a treatment plan is created. And then this is sent to the treatment unit where we can now do volumetric imaging to make sure that that patient aligns. And then we can create this feedback loop, like Mike talked about, where we update the uncertainty in the patient position. So all of these imaging modalities and this on-treatment imaging drive, again, the need for deformable registration to integrate all of this information in and to make the most accurate representation of the patient that we can. One of the areas of radiation treatment that really needs this is something called stereotactic body radiation therapy, where we have a high dose per fraction, a limited number of fractions, so we need precision in the target definition, both in where we want to hit the dose. We need precision and guidance. We have a small number of fractions, so when we have a random error, these dose distributions don't tend to blur out like they do if you have 42 fractions, if you only have 3 or 6. And we also have novel treatment design. So assessing the outcome of these radiation therapies is very important. A lot of these sites are patients that have a not very good outcome, limited survival. So small incremental survival is good to know that we're going along the right path. So anytime that we can quantify this outcome and the normal tissue complications, it's better. So what we've developed is Morpheus, which is a multi-organ finite element model-based deformable registration system. There's 4 main technical components: R-Morpheus, which is the registration component; I-Morpheus, which applies this registration to the image to give the physicians and the therapists something that they're used to looking at; A-Morpheus, which is assessing accuracy of our deformable registration, because with every type of modeling, there's some kind of residual uncertainty, there's some kind of error, and we want to quantify that, and I'll discuss that a little further. And then D-Morpheus, which is integrating the dose, so doing dose summation over a deforming organ, whether that is a short term, such as breathing, whether it's rectal filling, whether it's changes in the anatomy over the course of treatment, or correlating the delivered dose to the response that happens after the treatment. Clinically, this applies in 4 different ways. The first is multimodality image registration. So prior to treatment, for high precision target definition, we can look at how that tumor is represented on MR, PET, and CT, and correlate those together. We can quantify physiological motion, both for reduced planning target volumes and accurate prediction of dose for planning. So when you have those PTV margins of uncertainty, we're also dosing the normal tissue that's around that. And when that's moving in and out of the PTV margin as the tumor bounces around, we have changes in what we think we're giving the normal tissue versus what we're actually giving it. The third is image augmentation for image guidance. So this is taking all of our beautiful pre-treatment imaging and correlating that with our cone beam CT image at the time of treatment. And finally, quantification of treatment response. How is the normal tissue changing and how is the tumor responding? So first of all, I'd like to go through the technical developments that we've done in those four areas. This slide shows the R-Morpheus component. So first of all, we take advantage of the fact that in radiotherapy, we do a lot of contour delineation. So we have two image sets of the patient, either inhale or exhale, an MR or CT, and we define the regions of interest that we want, and we have some surface sets defined for each of those organs. These surfaces are then converted into a tri-element surface mesh. So we have these TKI, where I ranges from 1 to 3, so we have 3 nodes in each surface, and this is defined for each of the surfaces of VK. Then we convert the surface meshes into a volumetric mesh that's made up of tetrahedrons. And then to create a multi-organ model, we take each of the organs that we've defined and import them in. We're using a linear elastic material model. So for each of the elements here, we define a Young's modulus, a Poisson's ratio, and a density for that. And then to link them all together, so we tetramesh those again, to define the entire volume. And then we import in the surface of the body. And so what we want to do is link all of these organs together. So the benefit of an FEM approach is that we can have very complicated friction surfaces, we can have sliding, we can have tied points, so like with the prostate, the apex is kind of tied down. So we can do all of those sophisticated things. We're starting out with a really simple model, and we're just doing tied constraints between all of the organs. So we take this external body mesh and create a tetramesh that then links so that the surface mesh on the body, on the inside where it borders the element, is a element that's defined in both the body and in the organ. So if that point moves, it pulls the other organs along with it according to the biomechanical properties. But we have the ability to expand this to include the friction models, which is what we're working on right now. So to define the boundary conditions for the finite element analysis, we take our original, our base model, and we import in a second representation of the organ. So this is an example of a liver. So we have the blue is the liver at the exhale position, and the pink is the liver and the inhale position. We then do a simple center of mass translation to get part of the way there. And then we define a surface from the secondary representation and divide the primary representation into a series of domains which have handles assigned to them, and then project those nodes on the surface onto the surface that's defined by the second one. So we have a guided surface projection that's based on the normal projection from the element, plus some small deviation that's based on the handles and domains. So this helps so that the elements don't get crumpled together. And then we do some post-smoothing. And this is an operation that's done in HyperMorph, which is a preprocessor available by Altair Engineering. So we do this for the organs that we think we can define the boundary consistently on our two imaging modalities. So for an abdominal case, we do this for the liver and for the spleen. And we don't have to apply specific boundary conditions for the kidneys and for the stomach because those move according to the biomechanical properties and the surface interfaces. So we run that through the finite element analysis, solve Hooke's law, and get displacements for every node in the entire system. We then can apply this. So we have geometrically different images down here, and we apply that to get geometrically resolved images as shown up here. And we do that through what we call a ray-driven geometrically resolved view workflow, where we have our CT scan and our cone beam CT scan. We do our R-Morpheus, which aligns the two of those together. This results in a displacement vector map, which we can then take the image and resolve it. This is done, we have our regularly spaced data, we interpolate that onto our grid, and then just fill in the voxels. So the next component is determining the accuracy. And the way that we've done this to look at our real anatomical images is identify bifurcations or naturally occurring surrogates in the tissue. So this is a CT scan of a patient and an MR scan of a patient. And you can see these dots. I don't know how well this is projecting in the back of the room, but there's some vessel bifurcations in the liver that we can identify in both of these scans. So what we have is image one, where we've identified a bifurcation, and image two. So if our actual bifurcation is shown in blue, our predicted bifurcation may be shown in green. And so we can calculate this residual error in this to quantify how accurate our deformable registration. It's important when we look at the results of this that we're limited to our scale of our image, which in the axial plane is about 1 to 1.5 millimeters, and in the Z plane is about 2.5 to 8 millimeters, depending on our imaging modality. So this is some results for the liver. We did some patients on MR to CT. This is about 25 patients with 5 bifurcations each in the liver, and then some MR to MR, inhale to exhale, for some volunteer studies. The average error is shown here, and then one standard deviation in error bars are shown here for each of the cases. These dashed lines are the voxel resolution, so you can see that for in both of the cases overall we're within the voxel resolution. Nope, so the bifurcations are these right here. So we've identified 5 of these in each of our clinical cases between CT and MR, and in the inhale and exhale scans for the volunteer patients, we identified these in the inhale and exhale scans. It's just identifying this point. So we have these series of points, and we determine the predicted versus the actual position. So this is, again, we did this for a series of 5 volunteer inhale and exhale patients. This is the range of motion in the AP, or left right AP and sup inf. This is the range of motion, so you can see it's quite substantial. And these are the one standard deviation error bars for the Morpheus registration. So we're about 1.5 millimeters in accuracy. To incorporate the dose, we take our breathing motion of the patient, combine that with our dose distribution, and then we can get our treatment parameters out that include the deformable registration. To sum the dose in the breathing model, we use this equation here where we have the phase of breathing, and we divide the breathing phase into 6 steps. We have the transformation map, delta XYZ, from the deformation, the dose on the inhale and exhale CT scan, and then a time waiting for each breathing phase. And this gives you results like this. If you have the nominal plan, which is the static, and including deformation, you can get plus or minus 20%. If you just have a rigid body model, you can still get those type of results. But if you look at deformation minus rigid body, you can get about 10% difference. So now on to clinical applications. I'm going to use liver SBRT as a model to look at incorporating multimodality image registration, looking at physiological motion, online image guidance, and response assessment. So this is an example of a clinical patient. All this was done offline. So these are patients that are treated on a protocol. We take their data and then we analyze it offline to see how this would affect their treatment had we have used it. So this is a planning CT scan at exhale, 3 millimeter slices with oral and IV contrast. So in a liver scan on CT, you can only see the tumor if you've administered contrast. So you can see the tumor here. And this is an MR scan at exhale with 7 millimeter slice thickness, and we used ASSET to get the entire image volume in one breath hold. So the liver was contoured on both, but after rigid registration, we showed the outline of the CT liver onto the MR. So you can see that there's deformation of the liver. So we have some residual uncertainty in our registration of these two. So again, we convert those contours into a mesh, and that's shown here, and then we do the R Morpheus component where we do the registration. So if you look at the scan, it looks like it's a pretty good fit. But if we look at before deformable registration of the tumor, you can see that there's a discrepancy, and then after you can see that there's a better concordance. So one of the clinical uncertainties here is which one of these tumors is the truth. Which one do we trust? And we're not sure, so we're currently doing a pathology study where we're doing in vivo imaging, and then these are resection patients, so we can do some histology on that. But now the physicians have to make a trade-off. Do they want to take the entire volume? Do they want to just trust one imaging modality? So if you use the concordance or the summation of both of these, if you didn't do deformable registration, you would be treating more of the normal tissue. So we looked at 23 patients with hepatomas, cholangiocarcinoma, and liver metastases, and looked at the difference in the defined tumor between MR and CT after deformable registration. And if you just look at the results here, this is the percent of the surface area that differed between MR and CT by more than 5 millimeters. This is kind of a criteria that would be potentially clinically significant. And you can see that on average about 35% of that tumor volume had a discrepancy. So what's really interesting to me from a deformable registration is how much more were these in concordance after deformable registration. So this is the percent concordance value after just rigid registration of the entire image from MR and CT, and then this is after deformable registration. And you can see if you look for each of the medians and the average, we increased for every single patient the concordance of the two tumors after deformable registration. So again, it's difficult to decide which one is right and which one is wrong, but we think that the increasing the concordance is something that we can assume is true. So looking at physiological motion, this is again a breathing motion of the patient from exhale to inhale, the deformation of the liver and corresponding motion of the tumor. So one thing that we often use as a surrogate for breathing motion is the motion of the diaphragm, because that's something we can see either on fluoroscopy or on some KV planar imaging at the time of treatment. And this is the tumor motion for five patients in the left, right, anterior, posterior, and superior, inferior direction, and then the diaphragm motion. So we can't assess the left, right, and AP motion from the diaphragm alone. So all we can compare is the diaphragm motion in the superior direction to the tumor center of mass in the superior inferior. So you can see that for a lot of these patients, the diaphragm overestimates the tumor motion. And what's really interesting is this patient, patient number 5, had two tumors. And for one of the tumors, the diaphragm overestimated the motion. But for the other tumor, the diaphragm underestimated the tumor motion. So this is more complicated, where you would need different PTD margins for each of your tumors, and you would have a potential for a miss for this patient if you were strictly using a PTD margin based on the diaphragm alone. So now on to improving our image guidance. As I mentioned before, you can't see the tumor on a CT imaging unless you administer contrast, which we don't do at the time of treatment. So we have our sophisticated pre-treatment imaging and then our cone beam imaging, where we can see the liver volume but we can't see the tumor. So what we can do is resolve the geometric discrepancies between the liver that we've seen on CT and the liver that we can define on cone beam CT, and then map that tumor, because we know the biomechanical relationship between the tumor and the organ that, or the organ that's housing the tumor, and the liver in this case, and the tumor itself. So we looked at this for 13 hypofractionated liver cancer patients. So they had 6 fractions. They had a cone beam CT at the time of treatment. Some of the patients only had 4 of the 6 fractions with cone beam CT. We did rigid registration to register the cone beam CT scan into the contour of the planning CT scan. And then we did subsequent deformable registration that included the tumor to align the CT scan onto the cone beam CT scan. So this slide shows the liver deformation, 95th percentile for each of the 13 patients, and the average. So you can see that there's a range of liver deformation. But then what happened to the tumor center of mass? So we can't actually correct for deformation at the time of treatment. So we have to convert this deformation into a center of mass. So this is after the liver has been registered using rigid registration. And then we apply deformable registration. And this is the change in the tumor center of mass. So if we had localized to the tumor, what the change was. So overall, left, right, AP, and supimp, the average is very small, less than 1 millimeter. That's good. Image guidance works for most patients. Standard deviation, again, is small, 1.5 millimeters. This is within our residual setup uncertainty, so that's fine. But if you look at the maximum here, you can see that we have over 3 millimeters in left, right, 6.5 in AP, and 5.5 in stoop in. So what we can come up with is that for most of the patients, it works, but occasionally there's the outlier in these two cases. So what did this translate for all of our patients? 33% of the patients had at least one of the fractions with a change in center of mass of the tumor of greater than 3 millimeters in one direction. So this was 4 of the 12 patients. If we looked at all of the fractions, 10% of the fractions had a change in center of mass of the tumor in at least one direction of greater than 3 millimeters. And 7 of the patients with more than one GTV had an interpatient tumor change in center mass variation. On average, it was low with a standard deviation of 1.5. The maximum was 6 millimeters. So this shows that occasionally the liver deformation causes one change in center of mass of the tumor to vary from the other one. So what would we do in this case? If the patient was treated with 2 isocenters or 2 localizations, we would have to do 2 subsequent localizations for that. And then looking at post-treatment, the assessment of treatment response, this is a planning CT scan that's registered to a 3-month follow-up CT scan. So you can see the overlay of the planning CT scan contours onto the CT, onto the follow-up. And you can see that there's been hypertrophy of the liver that's caused it to shrink up. So if we do deformable registration of the liver from the planning CT scan onto the follow-up CT scan, we can get a geometrically resolved view, so then we can look at the deformation or the response of the tumor. and this gives us a deformation map, which we can compare to the maximum deviation to what is standard in radiotherapy, which is just a RECIST criteria, which is taking the tumor and identifying in one transverse plane what the maximum tumor motion is. So if you have deformation, if you have change in the position, a lot of times our planning scans are done at exhale and the follow-up scans are done in a different department, so they're done at inhale, so you have potential deformation, and you just have this one criteria that doesn't give you a very quantitative response. So what we looked at was a correlation of our maximum 3D deformation to our maximum 2D or RECIST criteria. And you can see that they fit quite nicely, except for this one case here. So if we look at that, this is the initial tumor is shown, the big one, thank goodness, and then the responded tumor is shown here. And so this is the deformable registration for after the resolving the geometric differences of the liver between the two and then projecting that on. So we can see the response. So this is the asymmetric tumor response. So it gives us a little bit more information about what's going on in the tumor. And then again, if we look at this deformation map of the liver, we can look at the volume change for the liver, combine that with the dose distribution that's been summated over the course of treatment, and then look at the dose that's delivered versus the volume change in each of the tetrahedrons. So we did this for 9 patients and looked at the relative mean volume change in terms of percent versus the delivered dose. And we started to see this trend of a low dose hypertrophy where regions of the liver that got a low dose tended to have an increase in volume. And then as they got more dose, of course, the volume started to shrink because this is more where the tumor region was. So if we look at one of those patients, you can see that around 10 gray, we had an increase in volume change and then a subsequent decrease. And this shows a plot of all of the tetrahedrons, and you can see this low-dose crossover. So in summary, we've developed a model-based deformable registration system that uses biomechanical properties so we can exploit the information that we learn when we can see everything, when we can see all of the organs and we can see the tumor, and then apply this when we have limited information. So when we can't see the tumor, we can understand where it is in relation to the organ that it's encased in. We can do longitudinal patient studies, so we have one model that's propagated through so we can apply our previous information to the case that we're currently studying. It integrates multimodality imaging, 4D imaging, pretreatment imaging, and follow-up information into one model of the patient. And we can use this to improve the precision and accuracy of SBRT, and we've shown here for liver. We can also do 3D volumetric response assessment and correlate the response of the normal in the tumor to the delivered dose. And I've shown the case for the liver here. We've done it for several other different organs, looking at rectal and bladder filling for the prostate, a little bit of some cervix response data, and some lung motion, and a little head and neck. So that concludes my talk. I'd be happy to take any questions.